people react. Not well, probably. The smart fruit made me impatient. Something, I decided, was going on ahead, and I had to know what. I walked for a long way. I found nothing. Suddenly, Lux was setting. Too late to turn back. Smart fruit, indeed. A little farther ahead, I knew I'd find a shelter built for travelers on the way to the waterfall. It would be stocked with firewood and a few pots and blankets if no animals had filched them. Jersey might be there. But what choice did I have? The small domed fortress stood in a clearing on one side of the path. Stone and brick rose to a double-thick glass roof, round like a house but without bays. Slits high in the walls allowed those inside to peer out and, if necessary, fire arrows or darts. I circled it slowly. The heavy door stood high above the ground, shut tight. The ladder to reach it was nowhere in sight. A tiny owl peeked out of a burrow near the building and bristled. A wisp of green in the sky foretold auroras. No light glowed through the roof. If someone was inside, they hadn't lit a fire. But was that a hint of smoke in the air? I reached up with a stick to scratch at the lower edge of the door, like a lizard or a tree crab. Silence. I scratched again. Silence. Or, not quite. A whine. Very faint. Maybe just a moth. Then the rasp inside like a foot on a floor. Jersey. I didn't want to spend the night outside and discover what predators might be in the area, but if she was inside, I might be safer out there. A grove of bamboo grew on the other side of the path. Stevelin's guard thistles would provide a haven of sorts. Back home, my absence would have been noted, and hers too. By tomorrow, things would be different, provided I survived the night. I took a few steps toward the grove. Something wooden rattled inside the building. A bar being raised on a shutter that blocked an arrow slit. Something squeaked. A leather hinge. She had carried a bow and arrows, hadn't she? Why hadn't I noticed? When would the arrow come? I stood still, stillness being my only camouflage, and waited. No arrow flew. Finally, I turned. The aurora's greenish glow lit the upper leaves on trees where crabs twinkled. All the arrow slits looked dark and shadowy. I looked down and saw my pale greenish hands floating out of dark sleeves. She could see me. I couldn't see her. I drew a breath to talk.
To say what?
She giggled and whispered, "You're trapped, Tatiana." "I can walk away."
"Shh. The eagles will hear you. They're down the path. Listen. You'll hear them."
I listened. Singing bats, barking birds, a howl of a lion at the setting sun, which suggested that eagles weren't near, chirping lizards. A breeze in the treetops, followed by a rattle of crabs renewing their claw holds. But if I played along, she'd stay inside, trapped by her own fear. Something gibbered to the east, probably a mountain spider, and its cubs come down to fatten on slugs and fish before winter.
"That?" I whispered.
"They sing," she said. "They have a fire. If you beg, I'll let you in." That was her game, to lure me inside.
"Why?" I whispered.
"Why did you kill them?" She laughed, and I guessed which slit she was talking from.
"It will be fun to watch you get eaten. I wish I could come out. I'd tie you to a tree so you couldn't get away. I hear they like to cook their food by tying it live to a stake and lighting a fire around it."
That was pure fiction.
"You're afraid, aren't you?" she said. "And cold. You tried to catch me, but I caught you."
She sounded childlike, as if she were playing a game of frozen tag and could tease the frozen players with impunity.
"Did you play fair? Did you play by the rules?"
"Of course you did. You never missed a work assignment. Moderator?
I made you moderator. I'll make you into eagle food. Patient and generous. That was the Jersey I knew. Timid and appeasing at worst. Who was this woman? Think about it, she said. Smelly eagles with those big claws. They can hide anywhere. You'll never see them until they have you. Tomorrow, I'll say that you tried to kill me. You chased me. I hid, and the eagles rescued me from you. You're the killer. Everyone will believe it. You're always sneaking around with all kinds of secrets. When children use that tone of voice, I leave. It makes me crazy. Even as a child, she had never talked like that. But I could change her tone of voice and get honest answers. At least I have food, I taunted back. You think you can bribe the eagles? Not with fruit, but I have it, and you don't. Aren't you hungry? What kind of fruit? Bamboo fruit. If you don't give me some, I'll shout for the eagles to come. Will you be quiet until dawn? Absolutely. She was lying, but that didn't matter. I threaded 4 truth fruits on a long twig and held them up to the arrow slit. She snatched them inside. After a moment, she said, These are weird. They're poison. They're going to kill me. No, they're new, with vitamins. Prove it to me. Eat one yourself. I almost said no, but I thought twice, then answered fast, so she wouldn't suspect anything. I needed to learn the truth. Sure, I said. One flew out the window and landed on the ground. I stifled my hesitation and picked it up. The smallest one, at least. I hoped I would be emotionally stronger than Roland, or that the smart fruit would cancel out the truth fruit, or that my habit of never speaking frankly would remain intact. I made sure that she saw me eat the fruit, and I swallowed it in big chunks so I might digest less. It tasted cloyingly sweet, and slightly like the iron supplements I took when I was pregnant. I waited. I couldn't spot a moon to judge time with. Another green curtain of light brightened to the north. The aurora rippled and became streaked with red. Crabs and stars twinkled. The spiders continued to jabber. I edged closer to the arrow slit. Is it fun to kill? The fruit would take effect soon, and when it did, I wanted her to be already talking. He'll be the most fun of all. I'm not kidding about the eagles. I saw their fire. I heard them. I should call them now. I needed to distract her. Why your father? Giggles again. The truth fruit hadn't taken effect, or she'd be morose. I didn't know how easy killing would be, or how much fun. I killed cats, but they're nothing. They don't beg. Papa begged. Start from the beginning. You're not begging. I thought you'd be the most fun. Tatiana, begging. Why did you kill him? But listen. There they are. The jabbering again. It wasn't spiders. A wind carried a snatch of conversation, of language, full of complex squeaks and squawks. An odd, foul smell. I started to agree. Truth fruit at work? I thought hard twice. If she thought eagles were near, she'd call them. It's spiders. Spiders hunting fish, teaching their young to hunt. I could still lie. I saw their fire. I took a deep breath and lied again, each word an effort. It's the aurora. You saw it reflected on a puddle. Her footsteps rasped on the stone floor of the building. A shutter hinge squeaked inside. Down the path, something was talking. Could eagles talk? They drummed before attacks, but I heard no drumming. I seemed to smell smoke. Jersey came back. Nothing's going to kill you, then. I'll have to kill you. Why kill me? The question came easily, since it reflected my true thoughts. No one hurts anyone on Pax. You make sure they don't. That's fun, isn't it? You make people act nice. I can act nice. Imagine making them suffer. making them dead. I can do that. Her tone of voice had changed, less playful. I make them hurt. I surprise them. I'm surprised. You were never like this. I was never like this. She was quiet, then sighed, then was quiet again. Don't stop talking. I wanted to say that. When did you change?
I don't know.
Quiet again. What was wrong with her? The truth fruit made everyone else talkative. Had she eaten it? How did you change? That was an easy, honest question. I waited for her to answer. Waited even though I was filled with smart fruit impatience, and was about to ask again when she whined,
I wanted to make it stop. To stop thinking.
Truth fruit had not made other people more coherent, or her, apparently. Thinking like what? She whispered an answer so quietly, I had to ask her to repeat it.
Hurting people.
Why?
Why? Why hurt my children? I love my children.
She had become morose, finally.
I want to hurt them. I always think about hurting them. I see it. I grab a broom and beat Bram until he's bloody. His bones break. I knock out his teeth, smash his face. Oh, I hear it. I see it. I smell it. Always, always, always. At the baths, I want to drown them. When my husband kisses me, I think I might bite him, chew his throat open. I think it. I feel it, taste it. That's all I ever think about. I dream about it. I want to make it stop. Stop.
I couldn't recall her so much as looking angrily at her boys. She was telling the truth, though, wasn't she? To make it stop, I repeated.
I never feel right, no matter how good I am, no matter how I treat the boys, how good, no matter how good I treat my husband. I can't stop thinking about hurting them. I keep my house neat, I do my work, and it doesn't do any good. I can feel a knife in my hand and how it would feel to shove it into my husband's chest. Blood. Lots of blood. I see this, and I feel this, and I worry about this all the time. All the time, when I wake up, when I'm writing to Steveland, when I'm asleep. Sometimes I dream about it, and it's all mathematical, an equation about how many times I can hit Bram until he dies. The maximum number.
But you haven't hurt your children, I said gently.
No, but I couldn't make it stop. I tried. I tried. It didn't work. I killed cats. I killed Papa and the others. It didn't work.
I kept all trace of accusation out of my voice.
You thought it would help if you killed them. If I did it to someone else, I wouldn't do it to the kids.
You killed your father.
I didn't plan to. I was looking for a bluebird reef to set fire to, and I found him by the ponytail tree. He had fallen and broken his leg. I know you think I hate him, and he was mean when I was young, and I thought I hated him. I thought I wanted to hurt my children because of him. That's what I thought when I saw him lying on the ground. I tricked him. I told him I'd make him more comfortable and then get help. And I didn't. I piled rocks on him. One by one by one by one until he couldn't breathe anymore. He begged and suffered, and it was everything I thought it would be like. And I thought, I've done it. I won't have to think about doing it to my children. I was free.
The truth fruit and smart fruit in my veins made me want to interrupt and tell her she should have gotten counseling. There's a good counselor at the clinic, Lightning. I swallowed my impulse and waited for her to talk more.
I'm listening. I forced myself to sound understanding. You were free. No, I wasn't. I still thought about killing my children and my husband, and about Papa. I lived it again and again, every stone. It was better than thinking about my children. And then I thought about other people, about killing other people, anyone who was around me. And I thought, if I do it again, then I'll feel better. I'll have more to think about. I thought, if I pick someone special and do it horribly, then it will be even better.
Harry. Everyone loved Harry, and his work was so important. It would be perfect to kill him. I knew what I needed to know, but truth fruit makes a person talk. I had to stand there and listen to what I didn't really want to know. It felt good to watch him die so slow. It was better than I imagined. When the slugs came, they took a long time. I was afraid they would go for his eyes first, and he couldn't see and be afraid, but they didn't. But the next day, I thought about how much I would enjoy tying down my children for the slugs, how I could pile rocks on my husband. I don't want to, but I can't stop thinking about how I would do it and enjoy it, and I couldn't stop myself because it would be so much fun. Then you killed Rose, I interrupted. I didn't plan that, but I got the chance, and she's important, and I thought that if I killed someone who was important, who could tell me what to do, then I could tell myself what to do and what not to do. And if I kill you, you're the one chasing me. You're the one who makes me feel guilty. You're bossy. You're always pushing people around. If I kill you, then I'll feel better. I won't have to worry about being found out, and if I can rest, I'll have time to change. That's all I want. I want to stop thinking. I want to stop thinking about you, about Papa, Harry, about my family, about everything, everything, everything. I want to stop. Her voice was rising. She would call the Eagles whether she meant to or not. I want you to stop, too, I whispered.
I will after you're dead,
she was whispering again. The smoke smell had become undeniable.
I want peace.
I want you dead. The jabber and twitter became louder again, voices calling to each other as if they were on the move.
Here they come.
I don't want to watch. I don't want to see it this time. I just want it to happen. She closed the shutter on the arrow slit. I didn't move. I didn't breathe. Some creatures can see heat. Maybe eagles could. I waited and watched the aurora lights glimmer in the sky. Animals rustled in the trees. A bat flew past, and I caught the words,
Fire!
And,
Beware! Beware!
Jersey sobbed. And I couldn't lie to myself. I was afraid. How would I explain her at a general assembly of PAX? Was it justice? We don't have written laws about murder. But she's not well. What would I say? That I lied to everyone? That I was afraid of mistakes? I was afraid to lose control of the investigation? That I was afraid of manipulation by Steveland? And so I said nothing. Rose died because I kept secrets, and acted too slowly. No one will respect me. That's what I live for, really. Respect. Power. I have it now. I'm the moderator and the commissioner of public peace. Sylvia's knife means that I'm special. I'm different. I'm a little better than everyone. But I let Rose die. Then I took her place, and was happy to do it. I crawled to the bamboo grove. Steveland opened his guard thistles for me, and here I wait for dawn, crouched in the grove in the cold night. The truth fruit and the smart fruit won't let me sleep. I shiver and think. I'm different from Jersey only in why I did what I did, and in that I know how to stop. The aurora has brightened again. I could almost read by this light. If anything looks for me, it will find me, and Steveland can't protect me. He's only a plant. The difference between Jersey and me is that I will deal with things the right way. I will try to survive, and then I will be the best moderator I can be. I lied. I made mistakes. They can vote me out as moderator, as commissioner, and I'll still be me, knife or not. Day 377. I have never tried to go without bamboo fruit before, and I didn't know I would be so miserable. I'm hungry and thirsty, but not for food and drink, and in fact I feel too queasy to eat. My head aches. I feel as if something bad is going to happen, some sort of attack or storm or accident. Although I am at home,
and my husband has fallen asleep watching the fire burn to embers, waiting for me to go to bed. And I will sleep eventually, only because I didn't sleep last night. I won't eat any more fruit or use any more salve. I need to be free of Steveland. Last night, crouched in the bamboo grove, I was too afraid to sleep. My muscles stiffened and cramped, but I was too afraid to stretch, even to shiver, and in the aurora light I could see my breath. 3 times I heard eagle footsteps rustling through leaves and grass, gibbering at each other with whistles and rattles and snaps like sticks breaking. The smoke of their campfire wafted past from time to time. They were cooking meat. I crouched there and thought about myself and how I have always been true to what people asked me to do, not what I wanted to do. I have always lied to myself. I finally understood why I slept with Roland. I used him to get even with all the moderators I have served and with PAX itself for demanding a job that made me suffer. I broke the rules to rebel against Sylvia. Eventually, I glimpsed Lux through the treetops. The east became brighter. Turkey clans and boxer birds began barking to claim their territories. The scent of wet ashes arrived on the breeze. I hoped it meant the eagles had broken camp. I waited. If they were leaving, they didn't seem to be coming down the path toward me. I finally stood. Or tried to. My hips scraped like cracked pottery, weak and painfully rough-edged at the joints. I had to pull myself up by grabbing the bamboo. Steveland was watching. The guard thistles relaxed so I could pass through. I thought I heard a faint whistle from the north and froze. Eagles? Hawkbats? I heard it again. Still faint, but more clear. A pacifist clay whistle. 2 low tones. A rescue team whistle. Steveland must have sent help. I inched through the thistles and then hurried to the shelter. I had to keep Jersey inside until the search party came. A shutter in an arrow slit opened. "The," I said. "I heard it," she interrupted. I could barely see her face and a glint of green-dyed hair in the shadows. "They're coming from the city," she sobbed. "Those eagles." "They've left." Something wooden clattered on the floor inside the building, as if it had been kicked. "Kill me," she said in a pitiful voice. "I want you to kill me. Please. I'll come out, and you have a bow or a knife or something, right? Use it, will you?" I didn't answer. If I killed her, I could easily claim self-defense, and I would spare the citizens from the task of deciding what to do with her. Inside, wood rasped on wood as she took the bar from the door. The leather hinge squeaked open. She stood on the sill looking at me with puffy eyes and hands wringing a tangled lock of hair. She leaped out, head first. It was only 3 meters to the ground, but her intent was obvious, and she seemed to fall forever as I watched with a stopped heart. Truth fruit causes despondency, and she had eaten a lot of it. A severe blow to the head this far from medical help could be, was meant to be, fatal. This was suicide. But she jumped too hard and flipped over slightly as she fell, landing on her shoulders. Something cracked. Her bones or sticks on the ground or both. She yelped, tried to rise and fell back, panting. A trick? I walked around her. Her fingers dug into the ground. Her legs twitched. Her eyes begged. "Kill me. I want you to kill me. Do it." "Why?" I kept my distance. She may have been injured, but perhaps not crippled. "I know you have a reason."
"I'm hurt."
"But you'd rather be dead."
"Why?"
She groaned and twitched and looked me in the eye.
"My children. My children. They'll find out why I did it. I don't want them to think I would hurt them. If you kill me, they'll never find out."
A reasonable wish. But this problem belonged to PAX, not to me. Let PAX solve it. Still, as a mother, even a cold one, I could understand wanting to protect her children. The whistles were getting louder. "Say you did it for fun," I said. "Tell them that's what you told me." Or that you did it because you got angry with your father and Harry and Rose, because you argued. Tell them you don't even remember doing it. I'll tell them that you said whatever you want me to. She looked up at me, unbelieving. She said nothing. It's not my job to judge people. It's my job to try to keep the peace. That's all. The people of Pax have their job. Voices were calling our names, and I shouted back to them. Roland ran up the path, sweating in the cold morning, breathless.
Tatiana! You're here! You're safe!
He hugged me tightly, then looked at Jersey still lying on the ground, and looked back at me. She fell and hurt herself. The rest of the party arrived. A medic examined her. Then they lashed her to a stretcher, asking questions faster than I could answer if I had wanted to. With Roland and the two strongest men in the party, we went to examine the Eagle camp. We approached cautiously, keeping the scent of wet ash ahead of us, listening. The Eagles had gone, leaving behind a clearing full of trampled grass, a wet fire pit containing small bones, a few feces, and footprints. Split hoof footprints, not eagle footprints. Like the split hoof footprints in the museum. The footprints on the ceramics Harry had made.
Glassmakers,
one of the men whispered, then turned toward the shelter and shouted,
Glassmakers! Come and look!
Are you sure? Georg asked. Could be deer crab.
Nah, deer crabs are little U-shapes. Look, it's a clean split. Two rectangles, sharp edges. Lots of them.
I stared at the prints and the camp debris, and eventually realized that I had stopped breathing. I had nearly met glassmakers. They existed. We'd wondered if they would come back since Sylvia discovered the city, and now we knew.
Let's find them.
Roland looked at me with the face of a delighted child. I thought a long moment. No, they could have found us if they wanted, but they didn't. If we followed them, they'd think we were chasing them. They might be afraid of us. He dropped his gaze to the ground.
Yeah, afraid. Maybe they know we hunt,
Kung agreed, unhappy. I was unhappy too.
Glassmakers.
We'll have to think of a way to meet them. Later, but soon. The walk back to the city took hours, slowed by my exhaustion and the difficulty of carrying the stretcher, and after we tired of discussing the glassmakers, questions about the murders began to surface. Jersey, on strong painkillers, didn't talk. I showed them where Leif was buried. A group could return later to bring his remains back to the city for interment. We arrived at the city to exclamations of relief and confusion. Jersey's children and husband came running. I took him aside. She fell from the door of the fortress. He stood gape-mouthed. Tell the children she needs to see the medic, and we'll be at the clinic for a while. Take them indoors and keep them there. Your family will help you. He obeyed mechanically. I called a Commonwealth general meeting and explained, briefly and incompletely, what had happened, confessing that I may have caused Rose's death by keeping the secret and acting too slowly. It is your duty to decide what to do now. Murmurs. Unless there is objection, I will set another meeting for tomorrow evening, so we all may have time to think about this. We must return to the harvest. I paused. Murmurs. Lots of murmurs. In the meantime, I am available for questions, and will be in the meeting house tonight. Jersey's mother rose and spoke so softly that someone had to repeat the question.
Why did she do it?
I don't know, but she might not be mentally well. In the afternoon, I talked to Steveland, too tired to want to fight, but it happened. I sat down in the little greenhouse glittering in the sun, and Steveland began with flattery.
I am unable to express how happy and relieved I am that you are alive and you have found the killer. I watched, and you were very brave and intelligent. Eagles will kill without reason.
Those were glassmakers.
Glassmakers? Are you certain? Did they see you? Did they follow you? I will question my furthest outposts. This is worse than eagles.
Worse.
Worse. I do not wish to see them again. They left me without an explanation, as if they were seasonal moths. They left me to suffer and wonder and wait. I have no interest in them, and they have no interest in me. They were at the shelter, and I did not know about it, because they deliberately avoided my outposts. This is sinister behavior. But we wanted to see the glassmakers. He would have to get used to the idea, and I needed to ease him toward that realization. Don't you want to find out why they left? Understand my position. Mutualism and selfishness. Protection and abandonment. Trust and betrayal. This is not a dualism that allows for a middle path. Glassmakers brought me tragedy. Do they want to know the consequences of their irresponsibility? How I nearly died? We were going to have a problem. I thought about what to say, but he changed the subject. Jersey, why did she kill? I think she is mentally unwell, I said. That was becoming the official story. I can cure illnesses. I want to examine her before she is put to death. The people of Pax will decide what to do. They must not allow her to live. Killers have no place in my city. She did not even kill as a hunter kills, with minimal suffering of the animal. She is like an eagle within the walls. The decision is clear. His city? I considered, and discarded a lot of thoughts, so by the time I answered, I had an idea that seemed constructive. You could become a citizen of Pax. You could vote, and you could take part in debates. I am not an animal. I decided not to ask what he meant by that. Has anyone shown you our constitution? No? I will order someone to do it. I took the opportunity to leave and went to Bartholomew's workshop to ask him, a legal scholar, to educate Steveland. I explained that the bamboo could hear and understand English, especially if Bartholomew spoke slowly. He almost dropped the cabinet door he was making. I left after answering only a few of his questions. It was his problem now. At the clinic, they said Jersey had broken several vertebrae, and injured and swollen neural tissues caused paralysis and uncontrollable pain. They had given her some painkillers that left her barely responsive. I told them to do what seemed best for her. I checked on her family, knocking softly at the door. Her husband let me into the immaculate little house.
"Will she be all right?" Bram asked.
"Probably not." He closed his eyes and shuddered. The boys glared at me, the bearer of bad news. "But she and I talked when we were in the forest," I said, "and she wants you to know that she loves you. All of you. More than anything. And you mean more to her than anything. I don't have a way to tell you how true that is, but it is the complete truth. No matter what happens, I hope you will always believe that." The boys had begun weeping. I left. I was tired. I hadn't eaten any fruit, and the lack of stimulants was becoming clear to me. In the greenhouse, Bartholomew was almost finished talking to Steveland.
"Sympathy with the spirit means, well, Article 2, principles and purposes," Bartholomew was saying slowly and distinctly when I entered. "I can read it again for you."
"How is sympathy demonstrated?" Steveland spelled out on his wide, pale stem. "Greetings, Tatiana." Bartholomew turned, smiling.
"Hi, Tat. In fact, we have no precedent for demonstrating sympathy. Mutual trust and support, undeniably. You've been undeniably supportive. But on the issue of mutual trust, why have you kept your ability to listen and understand English secret? Now don't answer. Just think about it. But listen carefully. The Constitution says, any sentient beings who have expressed their sympathy with the spirit of our commonwealth and are willing to share in its goals may declare themselves citizens. I would say, although it's just my considered opinion, that all you need to do is explain why you are in sympathy and willing to share our goals. Write an essay, I suppose. with the final line, "And therefore I now declare myself a citizen of the Commonwealth of Pax." Perhaps we should have had a more stringent procedure. Not in your case, Steveland, because I can't imagine any objections. But in some future situation, this could create difficulties. The Constitution was written by idealists, and it has its flaws, like giving children the right to vote. What do you think, Tat? What else does our friend have to do?
I think that's right, I said, actually unsure, then added a bit pointedly, Steveland would be an equal citizen.
Equal, Steveland wrote.
Not like a Fippo cat.
Equal, of course. Bartholomew stroked his green braided beard. Sentient beings are specified. Phipps aren't entirely unintelligent, of course, but they don't seem especially self-aware. I've never had much of a conversation with one, at least. I suppose an operational definition of sentience is saying that you have it.
I will be a full and equal citizen.
Of course. Like anyone else. I think you might consider additional means of communication, perhaps in the meeting house, for citizenship duties.
With a great effort, I can grow another stem like this one by tomorrow. You must open a space in the floor.
They worked out the details, and Bartholomew left to tear up mosaic floor tiles. I sat down.
Jersey is sick, Steveland said. The medics gave me a blood sample to analyze. She still has active antibodies to the parasite that caused the scarlet fever this spring. Her body is fighting something. I believe the parasites are present within the cerebral membrane.
She told me she couldn't control her thoughts.
Like a root infection. I have had to destroy roots. It is terrifying.
I wondered if he still wanted her executed. I didn't get the chance to ask.
I want you to resign as moderator. When I am a citizen, I will take the job.
From citizen to leader, immediately. Equality wouldn't do. He wanted control. Perhaps so we couldn't leave him like the glassmakers? Or so we couldn't contact them? He began to tell me how he was more committed to our peace and success than we ourselves were, and above all was more intelligent, quoting phrases from the Constitution, learned so fast, and explained that our goals, such as justice, could be even better served since he was beyond the interpersonal relationships and hypocrisies that... I walked out. I went to my husband's workshop, and eventually I napped despite the noise of metalworking. He woke me in the evening, and we walked to the meeting, aware that at every few paces I passed a bamboo stem. Steveland was everywhere. At the meeting house, a section of flooring toward the front had been lifted up and temporarily fenced off to protect it from being trampled, although not even the children seemed frisky. I saw a mound and crack in the soil. The new stem was growing. Questions for me centered on exactly what happened and when. A lot of exacting questions and second-guessing. I explained about the intelligence fruit and truth fruit. Hathor wanted to know exactly whom I had considered as suspects, and seemed offended when I replied, "Everyone, at first." There would be even more second-guessing now, I thought. Bartholomew announced Steveland's plan to become a citizen.
"He should be. He's done so much for us," said Marie, a member of the committee who usually analyzes new ideas carefully. But she's a dental medic, and he works closely with the medics, so she already knew him as a trusted co-worker. A farmer agreed.
"Without him, we'd eat a lot less," Hathor said.
"A new citizen,"
and nudged Forrest. They'd have a fresh target.
"Does he understand us?" Nevada asked. "He's never even been to one of these meetings. Does he understand democracy and voting?"
Bartholomew arched an eyebrow.
"That's a point I'm exploring with him. He plans to grow a stem here to communicate."
He pointed to the open space in the floor. The medic said Jersey was stable, but in a grave state. They thought the antibodies Steve Lind had discovered might be related to an autoimmune disorder or an infection. They were trying to keep her comfortable. Her children had visited her. I expected criticism for my decision not to pursue the glassmakers, since there is a tangible passion to know about them. Instead, I got a lot of questions about what exactly I had heard and seen. How did they talk? Smell? Every little detail told twice. Some of the hunters suggested initiating a process of observation, and perhaps gift-giving. Nevada wanted to set copies of Harry's art in places where it might be found as a peace gesture, so they could begin to understand us. Pursuit, many agreed, might have been misinterpreted. But why hadn't the glassmakers initiated contact? We wanted to meet them so badly. But we needed to do it right. People should have complained about what I did. Hathor and Forrest, at least. But during the meeting, someone began to snack on a piece of fruit. That was it. Steve Lind had made them docile. Agreeable. They were drugged. After the questions were answered, I took members of the committee aside and told them that Steve Lind wanted to be moderator. He wants control, and he's powerful. You know how much he can do, and he would do it, even down to little details of our lives. Moderators can only do what the committee lets them, Cedar said.
Can he do that? Moon asked Bartholomew. He's not human.
Technically, once he's a citizen, it's possible for him to be elected. But we already have a moderator, so the post isn't open.
They'd never do that on Earth. Let a plant run things and be equal, Moon said, as if it were a good reason.
He's never thought of himself as our equal, always as superior, I said.
But you can work with him, Cedar said.
Marie knit her brows, which deepened the wrinkles across her forehead.
Moderator might be too much, but Steve Lind is our friend. He has his idiosyncrasies, and that's a concern. Plants think differently, and you have to allow for that. But he genuinely cares about us.
Docile fruit was at work. Get some rest, Marie told me.
We'll talk about this.
My husband, when he learned what Steve Lind wanted and why I wasn't eating fruit, quietly removed all bamboo fruit from our home so I wouldn't be tempted. So I end the day in a situation worse than last night's. Then I was in danger. Now everyone is. And there's nothing I can do. Day 378. Notes from the evening Commonwealth meeting. Agenda created in collaboration with Bartholomew and others. Quorum present. 271 people. Missing. Jersey's children, her mother, medical personnel, medical patients including Jersey, and city wall guards. Medics and guards represented by proxies. Jersey's husband was present. I have never seen a more miserable person. Pale and drooped like a wilted flower, which was not surprising, given what he would have to say. First item. Steve Lind's citizenship declaration. We had prearranged this ceremony, although Steve Lind hadn't been informed of everything. The stem had grown tall, bloated, pale, and leafless. Steve Lind had said earlier in the day that the growth had been very taxing, and he had had to pull in adenine and sugars from some distance. People settled into seats and benches, sat on the floor in the aisles, and stood along the walls. Harry's art displays had been pushed into corners. Bartholomew explained the constitutional provisions. Steve Lind presented his statement of sympathy with the spirit of the Commonwealth of Pax.
I share your natural disposition for joy, community, freedom, and peace. Especially peace.
Freedom. Steve Lind and I had discussed that earlier in the afternoon. I don't think he understood what that meant.
Animals are repetitive, he had said. If they can be prevented from repeating mistakes, their lives would be more free.
We wrangled over that for some time. He still wanted to ban boat races. But at the meeting, he continued,
I regret the loss of the bamboo civilization before my germination, but you have brought me aspirations beyond my imagination. I share your love of beauty and curiosity in the world and universe around us, and your hope for a happier life. With some of you, I also share vanity, and that is why I did not tell you I could hear and understand your language. I was waiting for fluency. Liar. But freedom includes the freedom to lie, especially to ourselves. The truth fruit had only made people miserable. And therefore, he said, I, Steveland Jamil Barr, now declare myself a citizen of the Commonwealth of Pax. He had claimed the full Earth name of the first human to die on the trip here. What cheek. Everyone rose to applaud. Children came forward to sing and dance the welcoming song for newborns, which Steveland had not expected. Thank you, his stem said. I am very happy. It is the start of a new life. Item 2 was Jersey, and went as planned. Medics reported that they could care for her paralysis, but not her pain, which was severe. They discussed the antibodies in her blood and the probability, according to medical texts, that the infection had affected her behavior. Her husband, who had spoken with her, rose to plead with great dignity on her behalf for her death, a gentle euthanasia. Steveland, as planned, offered to work with the medics to investigate her condition to see if it could be treated. He promised to prevent her pain during the investigation and her final sleep, as he had done in previous cases of euthanasia. Her husband said that nothing would make him and Jersey happier than to be sure no one would ever suffer from that illness again. Citizens agreed on a voice vote. So everyone was happy, especially Steveland, who had wanted her dead and would kill her. The hard issues were avoided. The third issue was the glassmakers. The hunters, as they had proposed earlier, rose to suggest setting out gifts for the glassmakers and slowly initiating a peaceful encounter. Steveland, who had not been consulted, warned that the glassmakers could be capricious. They left the city suddenly. I do not know why, but now they have no interest in this place or you. We would waste our time and effort. The debate was long, deep, and productive, and several people pointed out that we could ask them why they left if we developed contact. The hunter's proposal, somewhat modified, passed with 53 votes opposed, including Steveland, although most of the opposition was from people who wanted to move faster. I wonder what it's like for a creature used to solitude for so long to discover the compromises of social living. Fourth, Steveland's candidacy for moderator. He hadn't formally announced it, but that didn't matter. The committee had a plan. Bartholomew spoke.
Of course, there's no vacancy. Although, of course, the committee could vote Tatiana out. But I think this would be a good time to discuss the nature of the office itself.
He discussed in detail the duties, constraints, and prerogatives of the office. A historian recapped the administrations of the previous moderators. The children began to fidget. And who could blame them? The talks were not for their benefit. Speakers from the floor outlined the relationship of the moderator to groups like the farmers, weavers, and hunters. Steveland was listening, and occasionally, Bartholomew asked him if he had understood a certain issue. Marie rose to speak on the rule of generations. Each generation sets its rules, dress, habits, and organization as freely as possible. I believe in that, of course, which was the only reason I allowed the meeting to continue. Cedar had brought me Generation 6's plan just after lunch. They were worried about Steveland. I hate the plan, but they had put together a majority, and the worst thing is that their logic might be correct. She led me out to a yam field to talk far from any bamboo.
"He'll get what he wants one way or another," she said acidly,
but she's always like that. She's young, tough, and a leader because she elbows her way to the front of a group.
"I know he means well, but, you know, he wants a lot, and he doesn't really understand us. We are worried.
But we can't survive without him, and we've been working and living with him for a long time. We brought the Greenies in on this. Even Marie. She grimaced. The two women did not like each other, Cedar continued. She said he's been acting as a leader of his own little team for a long time, in many ways a citizen already. But every team leader is held accountable, and that's a kind of control. We decided the best way to control him is to give him some of what he wants. Limited power. The limits that any leader winds up having. You know what I mean. You've been working well with Steveland. You can keep him reasonable, and the committee will back you. I answered slowly. He can control us with drugs. He did that with smart fruit and truth fruit, and he could do it to make us agree with him. She dismissed my objection with a shake of her head. Marie talked to him. He said he wasn't happy about that fruit. He needs us healthy. He knows better than to unbalance us, as he likes to say. Look, we have a lot of power in this relationship, Tatiana. We'll tell him it's a fair division of power and responsibility. A balance. Cedar hadn't come to explain the plan to me. She'd come to deliver orders. She certainly wasn't docile. And maybe there really isn't any docile fruit. But she was incredibly optimistic about what I can actually do. But I didn't have a better idea or the votes to get it passed if I did, and I'm used to doing what I don't want to do. Thus, Pax would sidestep another crisis. I agreed to become co-moderator, and we all wondered how Steveland would react. If he turned on us, we were dead. Bartholomew's show-and-tell was meant to convince him that he would need a human co-moderator to balance him.
Now, Bartholomew concluded, the moderator is a busy person. Perhaps too busy. Some duties take reflection and wisdom. Some take immediacy and action. As our population grows, so does the burden. So I propose creating co-moderator positions. Sylvia and her descendants have served us well. So has Steveland. Who can doubt his contributions to our success? What do you say, Steveland? Co-moderator?
I had the time to take and exhale 5 slow, deep breaths before Steveland responded. I know how fast he can answer. He was thinking. Finally, I accept. I wonder how sincerely. A voice vote confirmed his election. End of meeting. We remained crowded inside the meeting house and sort of awake for Jersey, able to express our grief at her illness and avoid the harder question of her evil deeds. Things like that don't happen on Pax. Cedar gave me a pat on the back, her beaded vest rattling. Good work, she whispered in my ear. Good luck. She and other beads and greenies had gathered around Steveland to butter him up. I left the meeting early and paused at a stem in the street that I knew had ears. We'll talk tomorrow. Steveland and I had already talked earlier that afternoon, and it hadn't been pleasant. Steveland had noticed I wasn't eating fruit.
Are you afraid I will try to control you?
Suddenly, the greenhouse filled with slugs, humming and squirming toward me. My hands had been tied to the table, and bones already poked through the flesh. Termite worms drilled through the bones, and then the vision was gone.
It is a scent, the words on the stem said. A gas that makes bad dreams. Do not be afraid of the fruit. I make it pleasant. I make it healthy. But I do not make it to control you. I could do much, but it would be wrong. I have learned to trust pacifists, and I have learned that leadership is not violence. Force is violence. Mutualism involves trust, so I will show that you can trust me. I want to help all pacifists, and I can do great good. The future can be a new way to live. You will like it.
Thank the stars I'm an old woman. I won't have to deal with Steveland forever. Day 379. So the crisis is over. The problems are solved. I rose this morning dressed and went to the ovens. Nye, a baker, worked with teenage efficiency, pulling lentil-filled turnovers from ovens that vented white smoke. Flower dusted his arms, and a strand of beads dangled around his neck. The sweat on his cheeks dampened the curls of the first hairs of a beard. He worked under the sign he had carved and placed over the ovens. Bread is the essence of Pax. Its first crop was wheat. I like getting bread in the morning. The ovens line the back wall of a square building. Soot on the walls and ceiling makes it dark like a cave. The wide doors stand open in all but the worst weather, and even the cold dawn breeze couldn't dilute the air inside, warm and scented with yeast, browning crusts, and hickory wood. I was among the early risers, as usual, waiting with yawning children and farm workers preparing to hike to distant fields. Cedar arrived, looped in strings of Generation 6 beads like a dew-covered doll. She's a meteorologist as well as a cartographer, and sunrise observations matter to her. "Nice meeting last night," she said. A few people nodded.
"Everything was thought through," one of them said.
"More like a show than a discussion," I said. Steve Lind didn't have a stem nearby.
"We said what we wanted to," Cedar shrugged and smiled. "Anyway, now you have an assistant."
"I'm sure Steve Lind thinks I'm the assistant." She glanced at the bamboo rising over the houses and shrugged again.
"Fippocats think we're here to invent games for them. This afternoon, we're going to go pick flax and bring it to them, and they'll race each other to clean the fluff from the seeds and eat them, and we'll use the fluff to stuff mattresses. Cats can think what they want. So can Steve Lind."
I got a warm loaf, and as I left, I picked up a couple of pink bamboo fruit from a basket set on a bench outside the ovens, a delicious helping of vitamins, minerals, and maybe a few antibiotics along with mildly stimulating alkaloids, because our health matters. Perhaps Cedar would make a good next moderator, and she's young enough to serve for decades. I need to start thinking about that. I think the next co-moderator ought to come from Generation 6, because the co-moderator idea came from their ranks. Let them cope. I ate, walked with my husband to his workshop, joined a team to harvest lentils, and went to bathe. Finally, I went to the greenhouse and, although it was warm inside, closed the door. "Committee meetings are always open to observation," I wrote. "Our consultations ought to be, too, starting tomorrow. If you have anything private to say, say it now."
"Why observation?"
"Because we are responsible to other citizens for what we decide." I hoped that an audience might make Steve Lind temper his outbursts and ease my burden, although, more importantly, I would be setting a good precedent. The intent was to keep him under control, after all.
"I have something private to say."
Those words disappeared quickly, replaced by a paragraph.
"I do not agree with the decision about the glassmakers. I did not understand much regarding the glassmakers because I lacked a comparison society of intelligent animals. But I have observed you now, and I am troubled by their behavior. They did not seem entirely intelligent. Yet, by a decision of the citizens of Pax, we will initiate contact, and we must try for peace and understanding. I will donate fruit to their taste as gifts. I believe that if there is trouble, and if they are used to fruit, then we can use it to control them."
The words faded, and the stem remained blank.
"Is that all?" I asked. "Persis and Wolf are bullying other children.
They like to lead rough-and-tumble games. You might misinterpret their fun, but I'll look into it."
"There is a group of women that meets certain evenings near the West Gate in seclusion," it said. "This is suspicious."
"The Philosophers' Club. They like to debate."
"Why do they exclude others?"
"To keep out serious people. I had attended only once, as a guest."
"I will listen to them."
"You will learn interesting things."
"Do you have anything private to say?"
Steve Lind asked. I wanted to mention Vera as a warning to heavy-handed leadership, but Steve Lind wouldn't understand.
"It's hard to be a moderator," I said. "You will have few real friends."
I am pleased to be a moderator, especially a co-moderator. Duality is good in moderators. Animal and plant, transient and permanent.